We're on the record. This is the Alaska State Senate Resources Committee. And with us today is Senator Stevens and myself. We expect Senator French on the way. We also have Senator Dennis Egan in the audience as well. And we're doing something a little bit different today. This is something for the Alaska public as much as anyone else. We're going to have a presentation on how you can make your home more energy efficient, home or business. And so we have with us Carrie Bowling from the Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation. Thank you for coming here and for presenting this information. We have a PowerPoint presentation, and I'm assuming we'll be able to get this online for people at home to go through themselves. But Carrie, please put yourself on the record. Welcome to the committee, and give us your presentation.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Senator Wilikowski. My name is Carrie Bowling. I'm an energy specialist at Alaska Housing. I've been there since 1992, mainly in looking at and researching information on housing construction, energy efficiency, building science, and renewable energy, and trying to get that information out to people through our Research Information Center there at Alaska Housing, and also through presentations to builders and realtors and consumers and home buyers. So I appreciate this opportunity to do this presentation. So with that, I'd like to get started. And I call this Making Sense of Energy Efficiency. And one of the things I like to tell people when I first start off is there's a difference between conservation and efficiency. And there are two different strategies. They can work together or they can work separately. But conservation is cutting back. So those are behavioral kind of things, turning off lights, lowering your thermostat, using less hot water, opening the refrigerator less. Those are things that are no cost, people can do very easily to reduce their energy bill. Efficiency, however, is a little bit different strategy, and generally that involves technology. And that's doing more with less. So if we can't remember to turn off the lights, at least put in energy efficient lighting so that when the lights are on, we're using a lot less energy when we do it. Use a programmable thermostat as opposed to just manually lowering the thermostat when we might forget. Using a water heater blanket, or if you can afford a new Energy Star labeled refrigerator, that's going to use less energy than a standard refrigerator of the same size. And a lot of people are familiar with the Energy Star program, but those are just, you know, two different strategies. Conservation, cutting back, efficiency, doing more with less, and we can combine those or use them separately for people. The other thing I like to point out to people is that those product purchases that you make, and we're always buying things, look at what the energy use is. And it's very easy these days because lots of products have these Energy Star labels on them, from washing machines to other appliances to even things like televisions. So I like this slide because it's showing two televisions made by the same manufacturer. And they're both the same size. And if you look at the power consumption, you'll see that where it says power on there, one uses 177 watts and another uses 218 watts of electricity. Well, there's some difference there. But what I really like to point out to people is what's called the standby power. And standby is the phantom power that's involved. And when we look at different products, when they look like they're off, they're really not. They're in a standby mode. They're drawing a little bit of power. And this top television only draws a little more than a watt of electricity when it's off. But look at the bottom one. It uses as much energy as burning a 40-watt light bulb. That's a lot of power. And so if you buy the Energy Star labeled one, it's going to have to meet some kind of guideline for that standby power. So when you look at these estimated annual energy costs, $55 as opposed to about $91, that's at 10 cents a kilowatt hour. That's like Anchorage, maybe a little less than Anchorage prices. But multiply those numbers 2, 3, 4, or 5 times for places like rural areas, and there's some significant energy savings and money savings there. So let's just cut right to the quick. If I had $100, we're talking about low-cost things we can do. Let's say you can afford $100 to do something on your house. And I was given this challenge a year or so ago by one of the local TV stations. If we gave you $100, what could you do to help cut somebody's energy costs? So I took up the challenge and ran this little exercise. So what we did was I said, let's by 10 compact fluorescent lights. That's what that CFLs stand for. So these are very energy efficient lights. Light bulbs use a quarter the energy of a standard light bulb. Those are pretty cheap now, $3 a piece. You can get them. Now, shower head. Most shower heads put out about 5 to 3 gallons per minute of water. Now, why is that important? Well, we use hot water. What if we could cut down the amount of hot water and still get a good shower? Well, let's get one that uses half of that amount, 1.6 gallon per minute shower head. And these aren't like the old ones that would kind of dribble out. These are very high-tech, efficient shower heads, and they're fairly inexpensive. Put one of those on, and it's a simple thing you can do. Water heater blanket, that's pretty much a no-brainer. You can get one of those for about $20 to keep the water in your tank a little bit warmer. You have to be careful about how you install it so that you don't cause a problem, especially with gas-fired or oil-fired water heaters, but that's definitely something somebody can do. And then, how about the doors and windows? We get a lot of complaints from people saying, you know, I've got drafts around my door and window, and why not just weather strip and caulk those? It's very inexpensive. A lot of times people will be able to feel the air coming around the window, and usually it's right around the frame of the window, the framing part of the window. And if we just caulk the framing right to the wall, that can reduce a lot of air leakage. Same around a door. And sometimes it's actually where the door opens and closes that's the problem, and that's where we put weather stripping, and we replace that weather stripping. On some doors, you can just look at the doors and you see daylight coming through when the door is shut, so you know that's a place you need to caulk or seal up. Or on a windy day, you can feel it. So $15 for weather strip and caulk, let's do that. In those parts of the state where we have to use a block heater to keep our engine warm during the winter so that it starts up nicely when we go out there in the morning on really cold days, those block heaters use a lot of energy, 1,000 to 1,500 watts of energy to run. And typically what happens is you get home from work, you plug in your car, it's on all night, and you're burning a lot of energy doing that. Where what you really need is only about 2 hours beforehand to have your car warmed up. So let's put a timer on that. Save some energy that way. And then the last thing, what about all those phantom power loads that I was talking about before? The standby power losses with all those electronics. Maybe it's your television that draws a lot of power when it's off, but also things like video games or computer games or other products and electronics, chargers, battery chargers that don't even have the battery in them to charge it up, but it's still plugged in. And if that thing feels warm, it's drawing power. Let's say that could add up to maybe 100 watts of electricity that's just on all the time. Okay, so $100, what are we getting out of this investment? Well, I did my quick back of the napkin kind of calculation on these things to see what we would save. And replacing those light bulbs would save you about $200 a year. That's pretty significant. That's a nice payback. That shower head, you're going to save $80 or more a year. The water heater blanket, it's going to pay for itself in a year. And then every year that it's on there, it's saving you more money. The caulk and weather stripping, I estimate at least $40 a year savings. The car block heater timer, $200 a year. And then the power strip, $100 a year. So you come up with, for that $100 investment, you're saving $650 a year. Now your mileage may vary, but this gives you a little indication of just some very, very simple things that just about anybody can do to help cut their energy bill. And so that's what we call the low-hanging fruit. In fact, it's probably not even low-hanging fruit. It's probably just fruit that's lying on the ground that all we have to do is pick up. And so, but when we look at this, that home energy use chart, like this bar chart we're looking at, what we've been looking at is mainly that other category of about 17%, the lighting. We talked about that in these items I previously mentioned. The water heating, about 18%, that's pretty significant. Those are all things that, you know, we've kind of addressed with these low-cost items, but the really big chunk of energy use, especially in Alaska, is our space heating. So how do we deal with that? That can be a big challenge for us, because now we're starting to think about not just caulking a lot, but also insulating a lot. And when we start making those more major improvements on our house, if we don't understand how our house works, we can cause a problem. We can cause unintended consequences in our house. And that's why I'd like to, if you'll indulge me for a few minutes, to tell you a little story about Grandma's house, which is about how our house works. And this is what we call Building Science 101. This is a typical house, very little insulation in it. This is the house we built maybe 50 years ago, even in Alaska, very little insulation, very drafty. We built these houses because energy was cheap. You'll see my little rendition of a heating system there in the house, and what's sitting on top of it is a little pot of water, which is putting moisture in the air, which are those little bubbles you see. Now, why are we doing this? Well, in the wintertime in Alaska, typically that outdoor air is very cold and dry, and it's blowing through this house, and it's drying out the house. It's also drying out Grandma. So she puts a pot of water on the stove to put some humidity in the air, which is how we got the idea that we need to run humidifiers in the winter in our houses in the north. Okay, so we've got those things going on inside our house. And the one thing we have to understand about our house is that it works just like a chimney. The cold air comes in low through cracks and leaks around the house. We can all feel those. That air gets heated up, goes out the top through cracks and leaks in the ceiling. That's the part we don't get typically. We don't realize it's going out someplace. And where it's going out is up. And all those light fixtures and our attic hatches and around the chimneys that go through the ceiling up into the attic, all those places have little cracks in the areas that are not sealed. And that may not look like much, but when you start adding up all that area, it can be pretty significant, the amount of warm air getting through those leaks up into the attic. So, everything worked great for Grandma until energy prices got high, and then she can't afford to pay her energy bill. So what does she do? She hires somebody to come in and just put some insulation in the house. Seems like a logical thing to do. When I get cold, I put on another blanket on the bed. I put a blanket around the house, and that's what we used to do, is just, and people still do, put insulation around their house to make it warmer, which is great. Saves energy, makes it more comfortable, reduces our energy bills. But if we don't understand how this house works as a system, we can create problems. Because you see, that stack effect, that chimney effect is still going on. That cold air is still coming in, even though it's slowed down by the insulation. It's not stopped because we haven't sealed up the drafts. We haven't caulked and sealed up yet. So air is still coming into the house. It's going out through the top, through those cracks and leaks. And now what happens is that warm, moist air gets up into the attic, which is now a lot colder because we have the insulation layer there. And that warm, moist air gets up there and it freezes. And then when it gets warmer out, it melts and it drips back down and it starts causing problems, durability problems. So this is what it looks like inside of an attic. All that white stuff is ice. And that's ice caused from moisture inside the house. And it's going up through a hole here that's that dark area, sort of in the middle of the picture. It's sort of a dark melted area. So warm air is jetting up through that hole, which is not very big, and dumping a lot of warm, moist air into this attic, and it's coating the underside of the roof and getting it all frozen. And then it gets warmer out and that moisture melts and it drips back down and it looks like this inside our house. We were trying to do the right thing. You know, put insulation in our house. But we didn't understand this house as a system. And so when I look at this, and I know that the roof on this house is in good shape. This is not a roof leak, like snow melting through the roof. The roof's in good shape. There's no leaks. I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, this is probably moisture from inside the house getting up around that light fixture right where it attaches to the ceiling because it's not sealed. It's getting up in there, freezing, and it's melting back down and dripping back down. So it's raining in the attic. So what I would do in this case is I would caulk around that, where that part of the light fixture attaches to the ceiling. And that way solve that problem. Here's another indication that there's too much moisture in that attic. This is the moisture trying to get out through the gable end vent on a house. And it's freezing on its way out. There's so much moisture. Now you can tell grandma, hey, take the pot of water off the stove. But a family of four creates 1,100 gallons of moisture inside a house in a year. So that's quite a bit. That's from cooking, cleaning, breathing, washing, etc. That's a lot of moisture that's got to go someplace. And then when the weather conditions are right, we get this. This is icicles and ice damming, a pretty severe problem on this particular house. And what's happening here is that snow is getting on the roof, and then the snow that's right against the roof is melting because the attic is warm from all that warm air getting up into the attic. So that snow that's right against the roof melts, it runs down and hits the cold outside edge of the roof and freezes and causes these giant icicles. And then we get a whole ridge of ice forming along the whole line of the edge of the roof, and that forms an actual dam so that the water that's running underneath the snow layer can't get over the dam and it starts backing up underneath the shingles. Now, a lot of people don't understand this because they go through what I call the ice dam follies, which means that they think, oh, I need more insulation in my attic. They put more insulation in the attic, they still have this. Or I need to put more ventilation in my attic. I need to put more gable end vents or ridge vents, and they still have this problem. Or they go to the expense of putting in a whole new roof, and they still have this problem. When really what they need to do is to seal up all those penetrations in the ceiling that's letting all this warm air get up into there, causing this problem. And that solves 90-95% of these kind of problems. And it's not just a durability issue, it's an energy efficiency issue as well. So there it is, there's the snow, the air gets up into the attic, it melts the snow and forms the icicles along the side. So that's why for all these reasons, we need to seal up the inside of the home. So that's what this blue line represents, is air sealing the house, and we put the good air seal on the warm side of the insulation in our climate. That's what we need to do. And we do that with, in new homes, when we insulate a house, we put Visqueen or plastic vapor retarder around the house to keep it, to make it more airtight. In a retrofit kind of situation, when you're making energy improvements, you're trying to caulk and seal up as best you can to stop warm air from leaking through that insulation up into the different building cavities, including the roof. So that's good. We've made this house now tighter. It's more draft-free. We're using less energy, more comfortable. But if we just do this, we still don't understand the house as a system because we can create other problems. We can make a very energy efficient house, make it tight, make it well insulated, but what about all that moisture inside the house? All that moisture has got to go somewhere from that family of four living in there, 1,100 gallons. Where's it going? Well, once we tighten it up now, it's staying inside the house. And where's it going when it stays inside the house? It goes to the coldest surface, like a window, which is not as well insulated as the wall of a house, and it starts to fog up the windows, condense, or even, you know, we get the dripping windows, and sometimes the windows dripping even freeze, and now we have more durability issues. Or it goes to a very extreme example of mold. And so what's happening here is you've got warm, moist air, and it's condensing, turning back into water on these surfaces right here. That's a stud for the wall framing. And so there's insulation in between the stud, and here's another stud. And the wood is not as good as insulator as the fiberglass insulation that's in this wall. So the warm, moist air condenses there, and then it starts to grow mold. Oops, somebody missed on their insulation job up here, didn't they? I don't need an infrared camera to tell if there's a problem with this house. And everybody pretty much knows that we don't want to live in moldy houses. You're unhealthy. This is a very extreme example. But what I tell people about this particular picture, too, is that this may not be a very tight house. This could just be a small house, but it's got lots of people in it. So you got lots of moisture. And there's no way to get rid of that moisture inside the house. Some people will say, well, why don't they just open a window? And that's fine, but opening a window doesn't always provide ventilation, because you need to have some way, a driving force, to move air in or out of the house. And there's only three things that can do that in for a house to provide ventilation: wind, temperature, or some kind of mechanical ventilation system. The only thing you can control is the mechanical ventilation system. So in this particular house, our weatherization crews actually went into this house. They took the sheetrock off, no mold in the walls, fixed the insulation, fixed the vapor retarder, put the sheetrock back on the wall, and painted it. But they had to do one more thing, or it would look like this again. And that was provide ventilation. And what am I talking about for ventilation? I'm talking about something as simple as using your bathroom fan, but running it longer. Not just when you take a shower, but running it longer during the day to help provide background ventilation for the whole house to deal with not just moisture, but other indoor air quality problems that can accumulate in the house once we've tightened it up and insulated it. Now, that's fine using a bathroom fan in some situations, but most bathroom fans aren't used by people. And there's three reasons typically. One is they're not rated to run continuously, so they can burn out. Two, they're not very energy efficient. And the main reason is they're noisy. They're not quiet. Whereas the new fans like you see on the left, and these have been actually are not that new, they've been around for 10 or 15 years. These are quiet, energy efficient, continuous duty rated bathroom fans. And so if we take out the old bathroom noisemaker fan and put in one of these, we can just do double duty. We can use it as our bathroom fan. We can also run it longer to provide ventilation for the whole house, help to provide that ventilation for the whole house. And we can do that manually by just turning the switch on or off, or we can get a controller that actually controls how often this comes on and off to help keep the indoor air in good shape. And that's a very simple kind of ventilation system. A fan like this costs around $100 to $200 typically, so more than your typical bathroom fan, but it does a lot better job, and people will use it because they're quiet and energy efficient. On the other end of the scale, to provide ventilation for a house, some people actually put in heat recovery ventilators, or HRVs. And what these do are they actually, when they exhaust the air out of the house, they recapture some of that heat and use it to preheat the cold air coming into the house. So we've got this nice little exchange of heat between the incoming air and the outgoing air to kind of preheat that air coming into the home. These are very energy efficient. They can, in the past, they've worked pretty well, but the fan motors used a lot of electricity. The newer units use very efficient fans, and so the electricity costs for running them are not as high. And you're talking about a system that's going to be thousands of dollars as opposed to hundreds of dollars. So that's sort of the high and low range, and there's lots of different items in between. But the bottom line is you want your house built tight, but you want it ventilated right. If you just build tight and don't ventilate, you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems in your house. So back to our house as a system. Grandma's got the insulation. She's got the air tightness. She's sealed up the house. Now she's got the ventilation in the house. She's real happy because now her windows aren't fogging up. She's not growing mold in the corners. So that's good. But if we stop here, we can create an unsafe situation. And that has to do with this unit right here, the heating system. As the building code says, if we burn fuel inside our house for a heating system or a water heating system, like burn natural gas or wood or fuel oil, the air for the combustion process for that to happen has got to come from outside the house, not from inside the house. Let's see what that means. So let's say we've got our house, and Grandma's in her house. It's nice and tight. She's got her little ventilation fan going. Everything's good. Then she decides to cook something, so she turns on her range hood. A range hood can draw a lot of air out of the house, can suck a lot of air out of the house. Because you see, when these fans are going, what's happening is they're just exhaust fans. They're just sucking air out of the house. So that means air is coming in through any cracks and leaks that are left over in the house. Now we're sucking a lot more air out of the house with a range hood. Oh, and then she decides to dry some clothes. So now she's got her dryer going. That also sucks a lot of air out of a house. What does this mean for the little heating system, which doesn't have an outside air supply to supply the air for the combustion process? Well, what that means is that because of all this suction being created on the house, instead of the smoke going up the stack, it's coming down the stack. And that is very unsafe, because even though you can see the smoke here, what you can't see is carbon monoxide, which is colorless, odorless, deadly, and that's why it's known as the silent killer. So now we're killing Grandma when we're doing this. But we got to do something about this. This is unsafe. The building code says, you know, you need to have outside air for these things to burn fuel. And so typically what you'll see are these holes punched in walls with a little louvered vent or something to dump air near that fuel burning appliance. In a garage, a lot of times, if you have an attached garage to your house, a lot of times our heating and water heating systems live out there. And so you'll see these same kind of louvered vents, holes in the wall that dump air into that garage near the heating and hot water heating system or in the utility room. And they need to be there. Otherwise, we create an unsafe environment. But a lot of people don't understand that, and they think, oh, that's just a hole. The cold air is getting into my garage. I'm trying to keep my garage warm. So they shut them off somehow. They try and tape over them or stuff rags in it. Unsafe thing to do. But they have to be there, those combustion air inlets. But this is a pretty primitive way to supply combustion air to these units. Much better strategy is, if you're going to upgrade your heating system or water heating system, use one that's direct vent or sealed combustion. And they have heating systems like this, water heating systems like this, wood stoves that are like this, gas fireplaces that are like this. And what they do is they put the air for the combustion process right into the combustion chamber where the fuel's burned, and then take the exhaust out as well. So you're not just dumping air willy-nilly into the house. Here's a little bit better picture. of a sealed combustion or direct vent furnace. So we've got air comes in one pipe from outside, goes out another outside. A lot safer, less prone to backdrafting. And if we've got these appliances in our house, we don't have to have that hole in the wall to supply the combustion air, which also impacts our energy use. So now let's put it together here for Grandma. Grandma's kind of got it on the right track now. She's got her sealed combustion heating system. Air is coming from outside to keep it safe. She's dealing with the indoor moisture problem by having air being drawn into the house. And if we don't want to draw it in through cracks and leaks, we can also put in these little things called passive air inlets, which allow air to come in from places that we want to come in from outside. And then it gets exhausted out by this bathroom exhaust fan that we're running more continuously. So we're keeping it healthier. We've sealed it up so it's draft free. We're stopping the ice damming problem because we've sealed it up. And we've insulated it to keep it warm and to keep that heat inside the house longer. And then we also have a carbon monoxide alarm, which is a state requirement that we have those in our homes to make sure it's safe so that everything's going okay and we don't have any carbon monoxide buildup.
Gary, let me just pause to recognize Representative Gutenberg has joined us. Welcome.
So, if you're just thinking about energy when you're working on your house, you don't want to end up with something like this. And this can happen if you're just thinking about energy and you're not thinking about the house as a system. You want it tight, but you need to ventilate it right. You need to keep it safe. You need to keep it healthy. You need to keep it comfortable and durable and affordable by including all those things in energy efficiency. Okay, great. How do you do that? Where do I start? If I'm going to do this build tight, ventilate right, where do I begin? Well, typically you begin with the air sealing. You want to seal up your house before you start insulating it. It's no fun trying to seal up stuff with a bunch of insulation on top of it. So here's a graphic from the Energy Star website, which shows, you know, where some of the big air leaks are. And we talked about some of those around the attic hatch, around light fixtures, around chimneys. And you can see in the blue lines right here, air is coming in, it's getting heated up, and it's going out the top, just like in our house as a system. If I go up in my attic and look and pull back the insulation and I see dirt around the back of a light fixture, I can be pretty assured that that's where air from inside my house has been leaking up for years. See, it's made the insulation dirty. All these little holes don't look like much, but when you start adding all the light fixtures in the ceiling up, it can be a lot of air that can leak up, and it's going right through the insulation. And we even have things called attic bypasses, and what that is air comes in low, it goes up through an interior wall in our house and right out the top. So we want to get after these things, and we can get after those with pretty inexpensively with a tube of caulk and a can of spray foam. So here you see this fellow, one of our weatherization heroes, is up there, you know, caulking all the little holes around this thing, around the box, also spraying foam where these wires come up through here, through this attic bypass. That's an interior wall inside a house where warm air is leaking up. The plumbing vent, we're spraying foam around that.
Gary, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, sure.
Any specific type of caulk? Silicon, latex, does it matter?
Thank you, Senator. Yeah, and I understand you're doing some work on your house, so you want to know. silicone is pretty universally a pretty good and benign product to use. Sometimes if it's got to be painted, then it can be a problem. But typically, each CAWC has a little bit different properties. Probably the more important thing to think about is when you're CAWCing around something that might get hot. And for that kind of situation, you're going to want something that's a high-temperature CAWC. And I would look on the different tubes of CAWC, excuse me, as well, and just see how long they're good for. Some are last 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Having done this kind of work in an attic, I want it to last 20 years or longer because I don't want to have to go back up there to redo it. So that's what I would look at, one of the things I would look at. This is one that doesn't require caulk. This is the attic hatch in your house. If you have an attic hatch inside your house, you don't really even have to get up very much in your attic to do this kind of work. Here's the attic hatch opening. They've removed the door, and they're putting this self-adhesive weather strip around that. And then they're making, a lot of times these hatch doors are made out of sheetrock or some other material which is not very rigid, not very solid. And so you can get some plywood or something like that to make a nice flat, solid surface. Excuse me. And then use these hook and eye latches to cinch down. Excuse me. To cinch down that hatch very well so it's got a nice tight seal with the weather stripping.
I'm going to get you some water.
Thank you. And this can be a major air leak. Thank you. This can be a major air leak where air gets up around this attic hatch. Again, it doesn't seem like much just from looking at it. But you could be surprised how much air can leak around these things and cause all sorts of problems, not just energy loss, but ice damming and other problems. Now, here's a situation where we have to be kind of careful. If we've got something that gets hot in our attic, like this furnace flue that's being shown here, the building code says we can't put anything within about 2 inches of that that's combustible. That could catch fire. So how do you seal up around this? Well, you use some non-combustible materials like this aluminum flashing. Cut little U-shapes in it, caulk it down to seal up around that hole. And then we're going to want to put insulation near this, but we've got to keep insulation a couple inches away. And here we're using this high-temperature caulk to seal it, as you can see right here, this red in color. And then we're going to put this little insulation dam around it as well to keep that insulation an inch or two away from that hot surface. So that when we put, say, cellulose insulation, like is shown here, right beside it, it's not going to get hot enough to cause a problem.
That insulation dam, is that just something you get at a hardware store? Is that some specialty item?
Typically, you have to make these yourself. And in this little guide that I'm showing you, which is on the Energy Star website, you can download it. It shows you how you can make something like this. You make it out of sheet metal, which you can buy fairly inexpensively at a store. But this is a very important thing that we need to realize when we're starting to do some of this insulation work in our house. We don't want to put insulation up against something that gets hot without taking protection, or we create an unsafe situation. So once we've done the sealing up on the top, then we seal where the air is coming in low, and that's typically right where your foundation wall meets your floor framing in your house. And that area is called the rim joist area. This area right in here is very leaky. Typically, in a house, you might see a little bit of fiberglass insulation stuffed in these areas, and if you were to pull it out, you'd see it's all dirty. And that's from the air from outside leaking through it over the years, making it dirty. And what we want to do is seal this all up using a rigid foam board, cutting it to size, and then caulking around it to make this nice and tight, and then draping insulation down this wall to keep it warm. Here's a shot of what a sealed insulated crawl space could look like. A lot of them don't look like this way. but they could, and you can save a lot of energy by doing this kind of work. You'll see that there's also in a crawl space, it's important that it's dry, and that's why they have this ground vapor retarder. That's that plastic material on the ground there that's nice and sealed, and you can see it's sealed, and it's sealed with this red tape. And typically we tell people that the one tape you do not want to use on sealing up things around your house is duct tape. A lot of people are surprised about that because it's almost our state tape is duct tape. But the problem with duct tape is it tends to dry up and fall off after several years. And other kinds of tapes and adhesives work a lot better to seal up. And you just want to do this work once.
Thanks for telling me that after I just spent several hours taking my ad.
Yes. You're not the first one that. So after we've sealed things up, we do want to then think about insulating. So we seal first, then we insulate. Okay. And typically we insulate in our attic because it's usually fairly easy to add additional insulation there in work in weatherizing a home. It's not always fun to do this kind of work in your attic. It's fairly inexpensive to do if you're kind of handy. But it's what I call a bad weekend or two in your attic. And most attics don't look this good. They're dirty, they're dark, they're hard to move around in. But if you can do this work, it's great. And so what they're doing is they're using laying unfaced fiberglass rolls to roll out insulation over the old insulation to increase the R value or insulation value of that attic. On the right, you'll see that, again, they're looking at something that might get hot. And that's a recessed light fixture. And they've had to put this wire mesh around it, which you should do. But if this were me, what I would do is I'd think about completely getting rid of that recessed light fixture because they get very hot. They have holes in them to keep them cool. So they're pumping a lot of hot air actually up into your attic, causing ice damming problems and energy loss. And so there are ways to deal with recessed light fixtures. Replacing them is sometimes a little difficult. Sometimes you can build a insulated box around them, but you have to be careful because sometimes the size of that box has to be fairly large because of the kind of recessed light fixture it is. Luckily now, there are several products that are available so you can actually seal these recessed light fixtures from the inside, from the inside your house rather than getting up in the attic. And they make these little retrofit kits that can help seal these cans from the inside. Here's another way to add insulation to our attic, which is blowing cellulose insulation or loose fill fiberglass into the house, into the attic. This is another way to provide that insulation for extra insulation in your house. And when we're doing this insulation work, again, in our attic, one of the things we have to be careful of is our attics and roofs need to be ventilated. And usually there are these soffit vents to allow air to come in, and it's supposed to go over, the air is supposed to flow over the insulation that's put there and then go out through a ridge vent or a gable end vent this way. We're supposed to allow that airflow to happen. So we don't want to get insulation so far into this area right here that it blocks that. Luckily, there's some nice things you can purchase called rafter vents or baffles that you can put in that will maintain that airspace of just an inch or two above the insulation. So if we have to push insulation over in here, we're still going to get that airflow over the insulation that's needed for the roof. So that's another important thing to watch when you're insulating your home.
Let me ask you a question, Kerry.
Yes.
Electrical outlets, is that something that makes a difference to add some insulation to those?
Yeah, what you can do, sometimes on a windy day, if you feel cold air coming through there, you can put those foam gaskets, you can take off the cover of your light switch, turn off the circuit first, take off the cover, you know, put the foam gasket around the light switch or the electrical outlets. Those can be good things to do. But typically, the big air leakers are going to be the ones that are really high and really low, and that's where you're going to get the most benefit, is if you hit those first, and then you then do the foam gaskets and that kind of thing. If you can only do the foam gaskets, I'd say go for that. But typically, you're going to get your best impact by hitting those places in the attic and where air is coming in the crawl space. Okay, so just to wrap up on what we're talking about here, again, top priority, caulk and seal those air leaks, seal high, seal low. Then we think about adding insulation. And then heating and water heating system, make sure you get those checked up at least once a year to make sure they're operating properly. And if you get them tuned up, that can also help make them more burn more efficiently and also check their safety. And then last but not least, make sure that we're providing ventilation properly for the house. We have the combustion air for our heating and water heating systems if they need it, or when they need it into those units, and also some way to ventilate the house using a mechanical ventilation system like a bathroom fan. We don't want to build tight and not ventilate right. They go together. And if there's anything that I think that has been my message in trying to get across to people when they're starting to do this energy efficiency work, is to try and get them to understand that, because that is really the missing piece. Everybody gets really focused on the energy and making those energy improvements. But if you don't understand that you need to provide this ventilation, you need to make sure you're heating system and water heater have combustion air, we can create a very dangerous or unhealthy situation. And that's not what we want at all. And that's my story for today on making sense out of energy efficiency. I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Gary, great presentation. Let me ask you on water heater blankets. I've heard a lot of people say, particularly with the newer water heaters, not worth it. You can have sweating, which could result in rusting of the water heater. Any thoughts on that?
The newer water heaters, most of the newer water heaters are a lot better insulated than they used to be, is my understanding. And so if you've got a fairly new water heater, you might not need to add an insulation blanket. What I tell people is a real simple method is if the water heater's on, you go and you put your hand on the water heater. If it feels really warm, then you might need a water heater blanket on it. And then there are different kind of blankets that are out there. There's the old fiberglass style. There's also some that use a bubble pack kind of insulation. They have different kinds of R values. And I think by getting the right one, I haven't seen really a problem with the sweating issue. And that could be also a sweating issue, could also be just because there's too much moisture in that area. So you got warm, moist air because you don't have proper ventilation inside the house. You got warm, moist air and it's condensing on surfaces.
Another question on ceiling fans, for instance, connections to dryers. Any thoughts on how to keep cold air from coming into those areas?
Oh, for the dryer, through the dryer vent?
The dryer or through a bathroom fan.
The newer better bathroom fans actually have a damper which shuts off when the fan's not on, and it's right on the fan. So right where the air is exhausted out of the fan, out of that box, there's a little damper that opens and shuts. And so you want that, and then on the outside, there should be another damper that closes to the outside. And if it's a dual dampered like that, that helps to seal up, resolve that problem with a bathroom fan. For a dryer vent, a lot of times those dryer vents, they're just a flapper that's out there, and you know, you get lint and other things kind of stuck in them, and they kind of stay open. They make a different style of dryer vent, which actually is a little shuttle device that that uses the force of the air from the dryer to kind of push up, if you will, this little gasket. And when the dryer is turned off, the gasket falls back down and covers the hole and makes it makes a better seal than the flapper. And so that's another way you can help resolve that.
Wood stoves and fireplaces, thoughts, particularly people who aren't using them, thoughts on ways to improve the efficiency there, or even if people are using them, any suggestions?
With the fireplaces, generally the old style fireplace, the open hearth fireplace, are typically energy losers. You lose more energy, you know, by burning the wood in those units than you actually retain, because it's such a large volume of air that comes through from inside the house, heated air that you've already heated inside your house is going out and up through the chimney, that they're not very efficient. So if you've got one of these in your house, you might want to use them sparingly, especially in the winter. When you're not using them, there's several different strategies of low-cost ways to make sure they're sealed properly. One is you can make a pillow, essentially, out of kind of a squishy foam that you might find on a mattress pad or something like that, and put it in a plastic baggie, and cut it to size so it fits up inside the throat of the chimney. So you get a nice seal there. Now you want to make sure that that is removed before you ever start a fire. You close the damper and you put this thing up there, and you should probably have something to hang down that tell you, get rid of this thing before I start my fire, because that could be a real problem. But that is a very inexpensive thing you can do that will stop a lot of air. Even with dampers closed on these fireplaces when they're not in use, they can remove a lot of air, take a lot of air from that you've paid to heat up right out the house. So that's one way. They also make a commercial version of this. I think it's called a draft stopper that you can purchase for $20 or $30, I think, online, that will do the same thing, essentially. It's a little inflatable raft or pillow, if you will, that fits up in there. So that's an inexpensive thing you can do, but typically a fireplace is pretty much an energy loser.
Question that's been asked is, any suggestions or information on the warm roofs with typically built in the 70s, 80s, 90s? I actually have one of these, no attic.
Uh-huh.
And in part of my house anyway.
Uh-huh. Kind of hard to get up there, yeah, to do any work.
yeah, exactly. Any suggestions on those?
For a warm roof, or a roof that may not be ventilated and doesn't have any attic space, you really have to try and attack the first thing to do is attack any air that's leaking up there from inside the house. And since you're not really going to be able to get there from the top side, you've got to try and address it from the bottom side. And there are some strategies of how to do that. Caulking around the light fixtures on the inside that may go up in there. Doing the retrofit kits for recessed light fixtures, so they seal up around those recessed light fixtures, and trying to get as much as you can from inside the house rather than trying to get on the outside. And typically, air leakage is the biggest source of heat loss. Sealing up air leaks, even if there's not a whole lot of insulation there, sealing up air leaks will make a major, major difference in reducing heat loss, and also in preventing ice damming, even if there's not sufficient insulation. If you're going to go to the big retrofit job of maybe wanting to add additional insulation into those kind of places, once you seal up that hot roof, so to speak, and you actually build another roof on top of it, adding additional insulation and ventilation, there are ways to do that.
Got about 5 minutes left. Can you talk real briefly about some of the tax credits, tax deductions that are out there for Alaskans, and just real briefly about the energy rebate program and the weatherization programs that people will know what sort of programs and tax breaks are available?
Okay. Well, there are federal tax credits that people can take for making energy improvements on their house. Some have to do with insulating your house. Some have to do with purchasing higher efficiency heating systems and water heating systems, higher efficiency windows and doors. Probably the best place I know of where you could get information about those is going to the Energy Star website, which is www.energystar.gov. We have a link to it from our website. And essentially, for a lot of these items, you can take up to 30% of the cost of those items, up to a maximum of $1,500 total off your taxes. And this is a what's called a tax credit. So if you owe Uncle Sam $3,000 and you can take a tax credit for $1,500, now you owe Uncle Sam only $1,500. So it's a very good thing to take advantage of. In addition to that, of course, the state has the home energy rebate program for people who can have the money up front to be able to make energy improvements and want to get rebated some of the costs of that. We do have that program that is available through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. You do have to have money up front to be able to pay for energy ratings and make those improvements. And then we also have the weatherization program, which if you meet certain income guidelines, you can get weatherization assistance at no cost. And there are those guidelines, and the requirements are on our website as well at ahfc.us.
Anything else, Kerry?
Well, I would just like to thank you again for the opportunity to be able to present today. This is a message that we really like to try and get out to as many people as possible about energy efficiency and also how our house works as a system so that they can make really good informed decisions when they're making energy improvements on the home. So thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay. And once again, the website for AHFC, www.ahfc.us.
That's correct.
And people can go and get links to Energy Star. People can learn more about the things that you spoke about today, learn how to insulate their houses, how to weatherize their homes. And you also have links to energystar.gov, which
correct.
Has even more information about this.
That's correct. We have a number of links, and we have information about our rebate and weatherization programs on there. And we have a Research Information Center library that you can call, get information. You can search our card catalog online. You can even download things right to your desktop or borrow materials, books, videos through the mail at no cost.
Great presentation, Kerry. Thank you very much for coming. And with that, it's 11 o'clock. We're adjourned.